This week on the Best of Public Radio, NHPR partners with the Monadnock Summer Lyceum. Louisa May Alcott is well known for her novel Little Women, but she was also an abolitionist, a feminist, a Civil War nurse, and part of the transcendental movement her father helped to start. While Alcott died in 1888, her person and personality is memorialized by actor Marianne Donnelly.
Thank you for inviting me to speak with such an illustrious group. Although I much prefer people to know me through my books, short stories, blood and thunder tales, and those which were written as potboilers under my pseudonym discovered in your time, my pseudonym A.M. Bernard. I see a few brows curling in the audience. Didn't you know that Louisa May Alcott wrote a number of books under a pseudonym? And I did it so that I might be able to rescue my family and save us from complete poverty forever, as you would remember. I am invited this afternoon to speak on any topic that I choose. And so I will tell you of my favorite remembrance of the vote for school committee in 1880 in Concord. Then I'll go back to 1843 and share with you my experiences at Fruitlands in your time would be considered a commune. In my time, it's known as a consociate family. I'll tell you about some of the lunatics there. You can read about them in my Transcendental Wild Oats, published in 1873. I will also tell you a bit about my Civil War nursing experience, and I will enact for you a story from that period called The Brothers, or The Contraband. And, oh yes, let's see, I am forgetting something. Ah, that book. That book, which it seems that I should be remembered for, and as I will have written in my diary, I hope that I should be remembered for my abolition, for my suffrage work, and for my fiery women that I penned for the future to be inspired by. I am indeed proud to have written the book, and I'm indeed very grateful to have kept the copyright, for it has filled the Alcott sinking fund and raised us to the great esteem that our family aspired to. You will know, of course, that my mother, Abba, came from a long and illustrious line, Quincy's and Hancock's, and sprinkle a few others if you like. And I won't get into the long story about the Hancock punch bowl. That's simply not for today. But I will start now with telling you about the vote for school committee in 1880. Well, some 20 women came. Most came with fathers, brothers, or husbands, as they should, and not the least daunted by the awful deed about to be done. Now, as we women arrived promptly at 1, and the vote for school committee wasn't on the warrant until 3, we had ample time to see how the mystic right of voting occurs. And when our time came, we ladies stepped by and we put our votes in the box without so much as a rustle from our skirts. And so a great surprise filled the hall. For as the last woman placed her vote in the box, George Ebenezer Hoare stood and struck the gavel. The vote for school committee is now over. Without any man casting a vote at all on the topic. Let me hear you. Are you all full of cake? How decadent. Let me hear you. One set again, loud. For I was perfectly pleased to see that since we had no choice and any opinion on any other of the topics of the day, that we had it all to ourselves for that vote in 1880 in Concord. You see, my father, Bronson Alcott, I'm sure you know of him, the educator, the philosopher, and the most transcendental of them all. Everybody, aww. he had gone up to the moderator and said, "When should the ladies vote?" And the moderator said, quite all a bluff, "Let them take their chances with the men, or come later, I care not which." And that's when my father was quite clever and had said to him, "Perhaps we should let the ladies vote first, as a proper token to them from this lovely town of Concord." Oh, no. But 2 years later, I am displeased to tell you that Concord remains a humiliation to me, for it relies rather on dead forefathers and imported geniuses for its reputation, and falls far behind places such as Deering and Peterborough. We're here in the lovely town. In 1825, you were already gathering and protesting and progressing and meeting with radical clubs, and you were already involved with the social justice issues, which I'm sad to say that still happen in your time. Well, now, 2 years later, I was certain that the ladies, once they saw that no bolt fell on our audacious heads, no earthquake shook the town, that they would come and swell. But no, only 8 women were there on time to do this. One deed now granted to them. One lady came and she said, "I come, but I come lukewarm." Bah! Let me hear you. Bah! Oh, you're just much too timid. Ah, so it was that I said, "If I'm not here to round up the ladies, then how shall it be done?" But I, of course, am one of the smaller and more insignificant of all of the ladies who went before me, not the least of which Susan B. Anthony and Lucy Stone and many, many others. Oh, but let me tell you something very funny. After ladies voted, promptly at 5 o'clock, without a cue, we rose quietly and we picked up the trays with the tea, and we served the men. We serve them the lords of creation. It's all right, let me hear you. Yes, you should have seen those faces that were frowning with derision before the vote. How they smiled affably when they saw that we could both vote and serve tea. Oh, on the same day, everybody. Oh! Yes. My family will be, it seems, remembered well into your time for many different actions that their grandfathers and going back had been involved with. It was no new news to us how important this issue of slavery would be. Well, into your time, under new disguises, I'm very sad to say. Well, the vote for school committee in 1880, all's well that ended well. We all survived, and lo and behold, I come to find out very pleasingly, after I should pass some 40 years later, you will have earned the right to vote. May I hear the ladies and the gentlemen, too? Please, hip hip hooray!
Hip hip hooray!
For you see, it is not women's liberation, it is human liberation. For should a man not be blessed to choose a woman who's had an opportunity to find out something about who she is, what gifts that she might have deep in her bosom, in her heart, in her soul, and in her mind, that she might have the opportunity to exercise the ability to think and proudly be able to give an opinion and a response, and to not have to just constantly talk like this so very soft you can't understand. Oh, what did I say? Now, would you put your eyes? Oh, don't look directly in the eye. Oh. Let me hear you say, "Thank you." Fresh air. I'm so pleased that you are the guardians of the fresh air. Thank you so much. And if you will be so kind, if you have one of those loud clanging things come by, you'll deal with the door. Good. So, let me go back in time to 1843. I was a young girl with a boy's spirit under my bib and tucker. Yes, I was. It's not that I wanted to be a boy. It's that I wanted their freedom. I wanted to be able to run and to tumble. I wanted to be a horse, quite frankly. I wanted to be the fastest runner in the world. I wanted to be able to think, and I wanted to be able to understand how it is that we could contribute to shaping the world of the children and the children of the children that should come. How could we do it if we were constantly behind the washboard and the bread and the iron and the needle and the thread? Nothing wrong with doing the home duties, and I'm certainly for doing the home duties. Good?
Yeah.
Ah, and so it is that when I was let free at Fruitlands, let me tell you, this is great fun. My father, Bronson Alcott, the educator and transcendentalist, well, it seems that his philosophies were being followed more closely in Ham Common, England, where he finally went to see how it was all going. And he brought back with him Mr. Wright and a very strange fellow named Charles Lane. Now, when I say the name Charles Lane, I want you all to go, oh! Charles Lane! Oh!
Charles Lane was a mean and growling person, and he had a plan for us. You will rise before the sun. You will have a cold, freezing bath, which is good for your soul. And your stomach will be growling, but you shall not eat now. You will sit and you will write in your conscience journal, and then you shall go outside and you shall do a few hours of chores while your stomach is growling, and then you will come inside and you will be thankful for bread, water, and apples. Let me hear you. Well, it was. We had such characters there. Shall I tell you about some of the lunatics? We had one fellow, Sam Bauer. Now, you can turn the names around in our time period. You can say David Henry or Henry David Thoreau, and he's a Thoreau fellow. He's not a Thoreau. Don't Thoreau his name away, please. But he was so, I loved going to Walden Pond with him and hearing him play his flute. Ah, the hermit. Nevertheless, he was not at Fruitlands. So, we had this fellow named Sam Bauer. Now, let me tell you that we were not allowed to wear wool. Would you please say, why, Louisa?
Why, Louisa?
Because it would deprive the sheep of their dew.
Oh.
We could not wear cotton.
Why, Louisa?
Because it involved slavery. We could not wear silk.
Why, Louisa?
Because it was much too vain a fabric, and besides, it would deprive the silkworm of his due as well.
Oh.
Then would you please ask me, Louisa, what should we wear? Pretty good. Linen, a very breezy fabric. The only problem is, Mr. Bauer didn't like linen. Everyone, But he was a gentleman, of course, and he accommodated us in whatever way was appropriate. And he was not the crazy of the lunatics. There was indeed a gentleman named Joseph Palmer. Oh, yes. Now, Joseph Palmer, I'm so much taller up here. Joseph Palmer went to jail for an entire year. Now, what do you think his hideous crime was?
What?
Oh, marvelous. Well, rather than having you guess, I'm just going to tell you right away. It's just such fun. You see, Joseph Palmer had a long, luxurious beard. And he refused to pay a beard tax. And so he stayed in Worcester jail for an entire year until they figured out that he was a very hungry fellow. And when he was released, he still had his beard, and ultimately the beard tax was taken and stricken from the books. Let me hear you go, hip, hip.
Hip, hip.
Some of the other people were less colorful. We had a lovely woman, Miss Page, or Gage, whichever you prefer. I've hidden her name behind false names, as you'll notice in my books. If you know Concord history and the group that was there, you'll know that you can unlock some of the characters from my books, and they're real people doing real things, and I changed their names. It was just so much more polite. Don't you agree? Thank you so much. And so it was that Miss Gage did the foul and evil deed of sneaking a piece of fish into her diet. Everyone, oh, and who do you suppose smelled the fish on her breath? Everybody go, Louisa. I don't see your fingers. And so it was, I ran to Marmy, to my mother, and I said, Marmy, Marmy, she smells dreadfully of fish. Well, she left the unit pretty quickly. People did come and go, and we were not allowed to use any animals to till the soil, and because we also were not allowed to eat meat. We should not eat meat, for meat should turn you into a foul beast. And so you might say, but Louisa, what should we eat? Bread? Water and apples, but we also did have some plums and cherries and corn and that which we could find. And there was many hours spent in discourse about whether or not it was appropriate to eat those vegetables, tubers, which would grow down away from the sky and from God. Well, I can assure you, we ate some tubers as our lives progressed. Let me hear you go, oh, good, Louisa.
Oh, Louisa.
And we were brave enough upon when we were sick to even sneak a tiny piece of beef into our stew or into our soup so we would have just a little protein, mostly when the philosophers were all off on their tours. Now I should tell you the funny story. Then you again, you can read about this. I think it's funnier when you read the book. Well, the men were all busy talking about, and now is the universe connected to the man, and is man connected to woman, and when is it, now how do we connect with this, and they were all going on, and nobody was talking at all about how the planting was, and so some people planted rye, and some people planted wheat, and nobody knew where they planted anything, but then they all left us to do the work. Everyone, the little ladies, of course, were able to haul it all, as usual. And so it was that the men were all philosophizing, and I, being wanting to be a horse, my mother said, Louisa, come here, dear. You like being a horse? Come along. And so they strapped me up with the big, long, torn parts of the sheet, and they, my sisters and mom, put all of the grains as best as we could in back, and they held up the other ends of the sheet, and I trotted off the proudest horse of all. And we dragged all of the grains back to the barn, and we were very pleased with ourselves. And when the men came back, we were so full of it, telling them, oh, oh, and the excitement, and how we were clever to invent our own little carrying wagon, and Louisa was the best trotting horse ever. And what did they say? The men said, oh, well, why didn't you save more of the grain? Let me hear you.
Why do you say more?
You will get there. Now, I want you to say every time I go, Louisa, you're not being ladylike.
Louisa, you're not being ladylike.
Oh, I couldn't stand it, for I knew that if I had to, I would be able to figure out. I wanted most desperately to be an actress. But if I couldn't be an actress, then I should be a writer. And I would go behind the men, and I would scribble with my pen as fast and best as I could, imitating them. And I was certain that after I wrote my first poem, and I saw my mother's reaction, and how delicately she folded the paper and tucked it to her heart. And she wrote in my journal, for we would write in each other's journals little notes. Louisa, dear, could you talk slower? Louisa, dear, could you walk slower? Louisa, dear, could you be more ladylike? Louisa, dear, why do you have such strong opinions? And my father would say of me, oh, she is so unlike her older sister, Anna. She has a temperament of, I just can't quite figure what to think of it. It seems to me that I was born with the spirit of the May rising in me. Yes, it does. And it has served me well in my work organizing. Now, I think you would want to know a little bit about my experience as a Civil War nurse. So, Dorothea Dix was really kind, and she wrote a beautiful letter for me so that I might go off. For you see, they really didn't want single women, but those single women of good character who were over the age of 30. Spinsterhood. Oh, terribly old at 30. Oh, but I had my letter in my hand. 1862, I went to the Union Hotel Hospital in Washington, D.C., and when I went and walked inside, I rolled up my sleeves immediately, and the first thing I did was I threw up all the windows open in the freezing December air, for the stench of the blood and the death was unbearable. And here is a little bit of what it was like. Now, he needs to have his bandage changed. This one needs to be fed only by a spoon. This one over here, he needs to be turned every 2 hours. This one over here has a leg bandage. Oh, that one, oh, he's dead. Just leave him now. Yes, it was just like that. And indeed, comic relief is important in times like these. But rather than tell you of the horrors of war, I will tell you I wanted to go and fight with the men. Now, Louisa, you're not being ladylike. But since I wasn't able to go and fight with the men, this was as close as I could get. And as I had had experience as a nurse when my sister passed in 1858, and I had seen the slow and agonizing experience of death, I had some idea of what it was like to carry the heavy bowls and to wipe the brow and to see the tears and to know the hopelessness. And there it was. I saw young babies, mostly boys, and so it was. There were a few women who did fight in the Civil War. They mostly wore men's clothing. They figured out they could get paid better than being a laundress. Yes. But rather than just tell you of these horrors, I would like to do, you may vote on this. Would you like me to act out for you as I have done for my family? I would take my stories and I would do them for my family, literally acting them out. And since it's 25 pages long, I've shortened it down to 5 pages for your comfort this afternoon. Those who would like to hear the story, let me hear you say yes.
Yes.
Those who would not like to hear the story, let me hear you say no. Thank you. Would you agree that the yeses have it? And so it was. The name of the story is The Brothers, or The Contraband in certain editions. There is Dr. Frank, Nurse Dane, the patient, Captain Ned Fairfax, and the contraband. Dr. Frank came in and said, "Nurse Dane, we wonder, would you please take care of a rebel? For you see, no one will serve him, being that he's from the other side. And besides, he may well have the fever." "Oh, yes, Dr. Frank, I would so love to serve him. I don't mind that he's a rebel, for you see, I want people to know that even though I'm an abolitionist, I'm not a heathen. An abolitionist is not a heathen, and I shall serve him because it is the right and proper thing to do." Dr. Frank said, "Then you will need help. We will put you up in the galley. You may use this contraband." There stood a tall, handsome man with finely beautiful carved features, the scar on the side of his face. And so he looked at me, and in his tall and graceful way, I sensed in him a proud spirit. And I looked and I said, "What is your name?"
"My name is Bob."
"I'm sorry?"
"My name is Bob."
"And what is your last name?"
"Ain't got one."
"What do you mean you don't have a last name?"
"Ain't got a last name. You take master's last name or you do without, and I choose to do without."
"Oh, I see. Well, may I call you Robert, which I think is much more dignified for a man of your stature?" "Well, yes, ma'am, you may." And I could see over the course of the few days that I worked with him that because I spoke with him just as a regular human being
And I started to show him the books that I had and the writing, and I told him of the Underground Railroad. His heart was open, but there was something quite mysterious about this fellow. I began to notice that he had a particular interest in the patient. So, one day, being very clever that I am, I said, Robert, I want you to bathe him carefully, very, very gentle, especially put the cool water to his forehead, and I'm going to go down below and take care of the other 32 that are waiting for my attention. And I made great steps out in the hall. So he would think that I had gone down, but I hadn't. And I waited behind the door, for I was certain that there was some kind of a plot going on. And as I waited quietly in the hall, and he had no idea that I was there, I heard a most dreadful sound. I ran in, and I said, oh, what are you doing, Robert? Why do you have your hands around the neck of the patient? Take your hands from him. Why are you choking him? And a man, as if he was in a trance, raised his hands, and he growled, where's my Lucy? And I looked, and I said, who's Lucy? Yes, comic relief is very important in these times. And so he said, Lucy is my wife. Oh, and when he took her against her will, and she showed, he sold her to a rice swamp in Georgie, and he took my old infirm grandmother and sold her away as well. And when I tried to defend my wife, he took and strapped me up, and then he tore off his shirt. Oh! And on his back, down his back, were 30 long lashes. Oh! If ever there was anything I could write or do to tell you about this horror, slavery is a hideous snake that stains the breath in everyone in its path, said Theodore Parker, one of the greatest orators of the time. Slave owners should have their throat cut, said George Thompson. And I remember the portrait that was hanging in our home of George Thompson, tucked underneath the bed in the midst of the William Lloyd Garrison riot. And William Lloyd Garrison said, I will be heard. Should tone yourself down, Mr. Garrison. I will not, for I have mountains of ice all around me. Oh, there is no story I could act or tell you to tell you of what this was like, but it was important, and although there may have been other economic considerations in this evil war, it was overdue. And when we had supported the Harper's Ferry raid with John Brown, and he in 1859 was taken away, we understood his brave act. For sometimes it takes an act like that to end a worse evil. And although I am not for war, I am more not for slavery. I am more for knowing that we are all human beings. Well, we continued to tend the patient, and when I said to Robert, you must go, and I shall write you a letter, and you will speed your way through to the Underground Railroad, he turned proudly to me, and he said, I will not, Miss Dane. I will fight with the 54th Regiment. And so he left. Days and weeks went by, and I myself was struck with the fever, could no longer really understand what was going on around all me. And when the patient finally seemed as if he were conscious, I said to him, where's Lucy? And as if he had been talking about beans and squash, he simply threw his head away and said with a most menacing grin, "Ow, she killed herself." Oh, what could I say to this wonderful man who was just flittering between both races that his beautiful woman was truly gone? I wrote the letter. I didn't hear any further. And as the months went by, I got sicker and sicker. And there one day, on a cold gray day, I felt it. I knew it in my soul. I had a premonition, and I heard the cart squeaking. The wheels, as they dragged the babies in with no arms and no legs, their heads and faces scarred, their souls ripped apart. I saw one in particular, and I had to know. I took the sheet from his face. Oh. And I turned the tag on his toe, and it said, "Robert Dane." He had taken my last name, for he had no other. He had taken my last name to his Lucy and his God, the brothers. It should seem to me that my writing career will be what will substantiate the work that I felt that I should do. And so it was that I was able to pen 365 different short stories, fictions, serialized stories, novels, and series, and that in your time period, you will hopefully discover and enjoy them, and that you would see that I could write about fiery, passionate women who were able to speak their mind and to inquire. It's that I want to be able for us to be the highest human being that we can be. It's transcendentalism one day, and it could be any number of practices another. You might ask me, "Louisa, do you understand transcendentalism?" Let me tell it to you the way that Nathaniel Hawthorne did in his book, The Celestial Railroad, which was a parody of my father's favorite book, Pilgrim's Progress. Are you with me? "It is a beast. It's German by birth. And it fattens people and passers-by with plentiful meals of smoke and mist and moonshine and raw potatoes." It seems the chief peculiarity of this huge miscreant is that it doesn't know what it is for itself nor anybody else. Now, a lady came to me once and she says, "Would you please explain transcendentalism?" And I really got tired of trying to explain that it was simply allowing people to unfold from inside them the innate good nature that they had, that we have the capacity on this little marble that we live on, the capacity to love and care and share. And really, why is it that instead of focusing on these beautiful natural abilities of all human beings, for babies are not born racists, babies are not born warlords, babies are not born to be monstrous. And although we might all have some of that in us, we all also have that capacity to reach deeper inside and to work yourself and your soul to where you express yourself at your highest possible level. But it took too much energy to explain this to people, and so I gave up. And one lady, when she asked me the question, I simply said, "It's just beyond." And she was quite happy with that response. So I will tell you that it isn't just in books or lectures or preaching. It is in the folklore, and it is in the songs. And it's the songs that rally the people
to do the social justice work that seems to just never end. And if you would be so kind as to sing along with me, I would be pleased with the words that were written by Julia Ward Howe to John Brown's body lies smoldering. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He had loosed his fateful line of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Louisa May Alcott.
That's actor Marianne Donnelly speaking as Alcott. In a few minutes, she'll field questions from the audience in character. You're listening to the best of public radio from NHPR.